This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, welcome to The After Party Live. Thanks for hanging out. As you make your way from the Mark Thompson Show into the party, please take a drink, grab a seat. We're going to get started here in just a moment. It's a rainy, rainy, weird, chilly Friday. They had snow levels drop really low, and we saw a sprinkling of snow on Bay Area mountain peaks. So it's going to be a chilly weekend for us. Thank you for hanging out on the After Party Live. A lot of animal stories today. And I first wanted to tell you about this really interesting new airplane. It seems that for a lot of years, the airplane itself, the style of it, wasn't really tampered with very much because they figured, listen, it flies, it carries us from place to place, and it's relatively safe. So why mess with something that's working, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, innovation, though, has a way of, you know, carrying on. And so there's a company in Long Beach here in California that has now designed this really interesting looking new airplane. And this could be the way we fly in the future. It doesn't look much like a traditional airplane. The company is called Jet Zero. And they have this airplane that's called the Blended Wing. And it's now been cleared to fly. They call it groundbreaking. So it's a company in Southern California. The company is called Jet Zero. The plane is called the Pathfinder. And it is, they call it a shakeup that's just about to take place. This entirely new aircraft shape. At the end of last month, Jet Zero announces its Pathfinder, a blended wing body demonstrator plane, has now been granted an FAA airworthiness certificate, and the test flights in the skies over California are imminent. The reason for the shakeup and the new airline design is because they're looking for ways to reduce carbon emissions. So it's a time to innovate. We have reason to innovate. The blended wing body says it looks very similar to the flying wing design used by military aircraft like the B-2 bomber. But this blended wing has more volume in the middle section. Boeing and Airbus are messing around with this idea as well. Jet Zero's new milestone apparently brings it closer to its goal of putting into service this blended wing aircraft as soon as 2030. They said they feel very strongly about a path to zero emission in big jets, and the blended wing airframe can deliver 50% lower fuel burn and emissions. That according to the co-founder of Jet Zero, his name is Tom O'Leary. He said it is a staggering leap forward in comparison to what the industry is used to. And it looks interesting. I mean, you see the engines on the top instead of underneath the wing, right? The wing looks different. The whole thing looks like a Tesla airline. It's very high-tech looking. But this could be the way we go. I don't know if those are little skylights or what all the dots are on top of the plane. I mean, it's got some windows down below as well. It looks big. We'll see. They're going to test it. They're going to put it into practice and see how it does. And this could be the airline design of the future. So, what do you think? Jet Zero, you ready for that? Let's see. Walter says it doesn't look like a flying wing. Kind of penguin-y. I have to go back to the picture and see if it looks penguin-y. Okay, I can see what you're saying, penguin-y. Yeah, I can get that. Yeah, that's funny. Okay, let's talk about this next story, which is an animal story, and our animal segment sponsored by Janet R. This is one of those stories where a dog is lost for a long time and manages to go from point A to point B, right? In this case, it's a really long ways from point A to point B. California to Michigan. I'm telling you. Finally, this dog is, I think, back with its rightful family where it belongs. This dog was missing for more than a year before it was finally found. The Harper Woods police brought it to the shelter where they did the microchip scan. They identified this dog as Mishka, who had been missing from its home in San Diego for more than a year. And I thought I had some video for you, but apparently I don't. I'm looking around. It's not here. So this dog makes its way 2,000 miles away from home. From San Diego. And ends up at the Grosse Pointe Animal Adoption Society 2,000 miles away. It's a terrier mix reported wandering loose in Harper Woods by a concerned resident. So the police come out, then the animal control comes out. They bring it to the shelter where this microchip scan identifies her. Then they call the folks in San Diego and they say, listen, we got your dog. The owners of Mishka turned out to be vacationing in Minnesota. How convenient. And so they took this 10-hour, 690-mile drive to pick Mishka up and get her back from the family. They say it is an absolute mystery on how Mishka came to be 2,343 miles away from home. They don't know. Like, did she hitchhike? Did someone steal her and take her? You know, was it a series of running? They have no idea. Wild. Here's a story. I do have a video on this one. The story about why some pigeons do the backflip. There are five genes involved, and apparently making these parlor roller pigeons do backflip somersaults. Pretty interesting. Here's what it looks like. I have to say, I don't think I've ever seen a backflipping pigeon before, but here's how it looks. We can see that. Yeah, look at them rolling around. That's what they do. It's the way they roll. Sorry, Heather, let me take your thing out there. Look at that. Have you ever seen that? It all comes down to genes. That's the word. All comes down to genes. The pigeons, like this one, have a movement disorder that actually prevents them from flying. There it is. And they say five genes are involved in making these birds do these backward somersaults. It's all this genetic mutation. Look at that. They can't fly, but they can flip. That's the way it goes. I thought that was kind of interesting. Let's talk about this trash sculpture as well. The pleasantry of taking a nice hike through the woods, you know, you're enjoying the sanctity, the serenity of nature. And all of a sudden, you come face to face with a trash sculpture. Yeah, let's take a look at this.
New at 10 o'clock tonight, the changing landscape of Pinnacle Mountain State Park. Some new sculptures at the park are drawing the ire of local hikers. Some have even started a petition to stop the installation of any more. Channel 7's Andrew Mobley made the hike to see these colorful structures and joins us with more now. Andrew?
The art installations were part of an artist-in-residence program in which artists from Arkansas and beyond were to derive inspiration from the park.
I don't even have an opinion of what that is. I couldn't tell you. It just looks like a blob of something.
Whatever one thinks of the new sculptures at Pinnacle Mountain State Park, you can't deny how striking they are. These sculptures are referred to as the Mushrooms. This one on the East Quarry Trail is called Crystallized Tears. The new art pieces, installed late last year, have not received a warm welcome from some hikers, who say they are so out of place that they distract from the typical goal of a hike, to escape into a natural environment untouched by humans.
It looks like a jumble of trash. Looks like, you know, somebody took a tornado wreckage from, you know, and just stuck up there on a slab of concrete.
Hamilton is clearly not alone in his view of the sculptures. Since he created the Change.org petition 4 days ago, it has received over 1,700 signatures. The aim of the petition is to prevent the installation of any more sculptures in Arkansas State Parks.
I'm trying to get in touch with Arkansas State Parks, you know, some emails back. I haven't heard back yet, and I will present that to them and, you know, just to see what they have to say about it, and, you know, make it aware that the majority of the people who use the state parks, you know, who like to get out there and enjoy nature are not for, you know, the sculptures like this.
The Arkansas Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism provided the following statement to KATV concerning the sculptures. There was no taxpayer money used for this installation. It was a private donation through the Arkansas Parks and Recreation Foundation, which also privately funded Arkansas State Park Monument Trails at Pinnacle Mountain, Mount Nebo, Devil's Den, and Hobbs State Parks, recently named the best mountain biking trails in America by Outside Magazine. And not everybody is condemning the art installations. Matt Seelinger, an avid mountain biker, says they don't bother him or anyone he knows.
We just ride by them and, you know, catch it out of the corner of our eye, but we don't ever stop and go, ooh, ah, that's really cool. Just doesn't happen. If it's something to get somebody outside and walking out in the woods going, ooh, what is that? I think that's a great idea.
And as some have pointed out, some of the art pieces are reminiscent of sculptures in a particular film.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. So let's watch out for the sandworms.
Personally, I think the sculptures have their own sort of allure from certain angles. On your side, I'm Andrew Mobley.
It's all in the eye of the beholder, Andrew.
Yeah, and that's what Ricky says, the art and the eye of the beholder. It reminds me in Petaluma of the bathtubs on stilts. Some people thought, this is art. This is going to be beautiful for the city. Other people thought, what are you putting in the city? Why are you doing this? Walter says, I agree, that stuff doesn't belong there. Is that natural? No. Yeah, it's, you know, everyone has their own thing. I feel like if you're in the middle of the forest, maybe you don't want to see that, but other people are going to love it. You have the tubs of Petaluma, I'll tell you. And so they've got 3,000 signatures on this petition at change.org calling for the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism to quit it and stop putting these things on the side of the trails at state parks. They say they're sanctuaries and they don't belong there. You don't put sculptures up, right? They're calling it garbage, a jumble of trash. Looks like a tornado wreckage. So I don't know. We'll see. It's that fight over art. Everyone has their different opinion and you're never going to please everyone. The FDA is clearing something new, a new way to treat depression, perhaps. This is digital treatment for depression, the first time the FDA has cleared such a thing. But they do warn the research is still pretty early on this. They are allowing the use of something called Rejoin, R-E-J-O-Y-N. It is the first prescription digital treatment for major depressive disorder. Rejoin by Otsuka Pharmaceutical and Click Therapeutics is a smartphone app, and it's intended to be used alongside antidepressant meds for people over the age of 22 who have the diagnosis of major depressive disorder. So this app system will take you on a 6-week program that works together with cognitive emotional training, cognitive behavioral therapy lessons, both. It's a low to medium risk medical device, is what they call Rejoin, that it's substantially equivalent to another marketed device, meaning it's just as safe as effective, and therefore it gets FDA clearance. The people that are supporting it call Rejoin a novel, exciting, adjunctive treatment option to address major depressive disorder symptoms that go alongside of the current standard of care. So it's a supplement, right? They say, well, traditional approaches are often effective. Many are left with only partial response to treatment. And this may bring that number up. And we know there's a lot of loneliness these days. A lot of people depressed around here. Depression, one of the most common mental health disorders in the United States. About 18% of American adults, more than one in six, say they are depressed or they're being treated for depression. That according to a Gallup report from 2023. The researchers found that up to 30% of people who do take the antidepressant medications only respond partially to those medications. So they continue to have depressive symptoms even while they're using the drugs. And the medication is at least partially effective. So it does something, but it apparently doesn't fill all of the holes here. Rejoin is designed to serve as an adjunct to antidepressant for those people that only partially respond. So it does something called emotional faces memory task. And so when you use the app, you're asked to identify and compare emotions displayed on a series of faces. The research has found that these exercises could stimulate the amygdala and the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, and those are the regions in the brain that they think are involved in depression. And that when you do this type of exercise, it has antidepressive effects. It's a neuromodulatory mechanism, they say, designed to act like physical therapy for the brain by delivering personalized, consistent brain training exercises meant to help improve connections in the brain regions affected by depression. So along with the medication, you're doing exercises for your brain to stimulate these areas thought to be where depression lives in the brain, right? And so I guess if it doesn't hurt, if it could only help, why not? The FDA is giving Rejoin clearance based on results from a clinical trial they did on 386 people between the ages of 22 and 64 diagnosed with major depressive disorder that weren't responsive to the medication. So they were either assigned to use the Rejoin app or a sham app that gave memory tasks that didn't involve cognitive emotional training or behavioral therapy. And the study showed that when people used the Rejoin app, they had an improvement in depressive symptoms from their baseline. The average change, they said, wasn't significantly different from the change observed with the sham app, but there were no side effects reported in the trial. So, does it work? If it's not significantly different from the sham app, I don't know. The trial, didn't prove that Rejoin has a statistically significant benefit, but it's also not designed as a standalone treatment. And if the risks are minimal, there's no harm in trying it, is what they think. So, Otsuka Pharmaceutical is looking at other areas of research, maybe testing it on other patient populations. Rejoin will require a prescription for download, and it becomes available in late 2024. So you can't just treat yourself with it. You have to have a doctor prescribe it, which is interesting. But you know what? I say if it doesn't hurt and there's a possibility it could help, then why not do what you could? You know, do everything you can. Let's talk about this lady. This lady, I love her. On a day when I'm thinking about the Powerball being $1.3 billion, that jackpot, this woman doesn't even mean to play this particular lottery. She pushes the wrong button and she wins a cool mill. She's from Virginia. She was at a lottery vending machine and she pushed the wrong button on the machine. And she ends up with a Powerball ticket and she wins $1 million. She said, I visited the lottery vending machine at the CVS store because I wanted to buy a Mega Millions ticket. But I hit the wrong button, and I end up with a ticket for the March 18th Powerball. She matches the first five winning numbers in the draw, and that brings her $1 million. She said it's the best mistake of my life. And she's shocked when she realizes that she won $1 million. She said, my heart was pounding. It was overwhelming. No word on what she plans to do with the money, but that's a nice accident. It's a happy accident, right? Talk about the eclipse for a moment. It looks like NASA is taking the opportunity to fly an aircraft alongside of the eclipse route so they can study the sun and the Earth's atmosphere. Yeah, they're going to deploy this aircraft that follows the route of the total solar eclipse, and they're doing it so they can collect data on the sun and the Earth's atmosphere. With the sun's light masked, the dimmer solar corona then becomes visible to the naked eye, they say in a blog post. But let me just reemphasize, don't ever look at the sun or toward the sun, even if it's covered with the moon, with the naked eye. Never do it. Scientists are saying it will provide them a unique opportunity to study a mysterious region of the sun. So they're going to put up their NASA WB-57 jet aircraft to fly along the route of the eclipse, and it's going to be carrying spectrometers and other instruments to make observations of the sun's corona and the Earth's atmosphere. The brief blocking of the sunlight will also allow scientists to study this mysterious region of the sun. They say by extending the duration of totality, we're increasing the duration of how much data we can actually acquire. So they've got these fly spectrometers to record specific wavelengths of the light and the cameras, and those instruments are set to measure the temperature and the chemical composition as well. And while they're at it, NASA also wants to take this opportunity to study the Earth's atmosphere. So they're going to put another instrument on board called the ionoside. It'll bounce radio waves off of Earth's ionosphere to observe possible changes caused by the eclipse there as well. That, they say, may bring an opportunity to understand how changes in solar radiation can impact the ionosphere, which then can impact some of the technologies like radar and GPS. NASA, of course, will be streaming the eclipse on its website and on NASA Plus on NASA TV from several locations. They've released a map showing the path that it will take across the United States. And I'll be interested to see what their research shows. I'm sure we'll report it right here on this very show, on this little party that we've got going on. Speaking of space and interesting things happening in the universe, how about this one? This story is about a first prototype in the UK, and they say it could pave the way for constant energy all the time coming from space. It would entail building a solar power farm in space. To do it, they'd have to take 60 different rocket flights and send up a team of robot builders. But it looks like it's something that's truly being considered. There's an Oxfordshire-based company called Space Solar. And they think that if they do this with the solar panels in space, it could power more than 1 million homes by the 2030s with a mile-wide complex of mirrors and solar panels orbiting 22,000 miles above the planet. I mean, if this isn't the future, I don't know what is. It's a super efficient design for harvesting constant sunlight. According to those developing it, it's called Cassiopeia. It requires the system to rotate toward the sun, whatever its position, while still sending power to a fixed receiver on Earth. It's been shown to work for the first time at Queen's University in Belfast, with a wireless beam successfully steering across a lab to turn on a light. So the founder of the company is saying that it's a world first. You can get constant energy and you can get it all the time. And he's convinced this is going to have a substantial impact on future energy systems and the way we get power, use power, etc. These solar panels in space. Does it not sound like a movie? Solar panels in space. Capture 13 times more energy in space than they do on the ground because the light intensity there is higher. There's no atmosphere or clouds or night, right? Some energy might be lost by the time it's beamed back to Earth and connected to the electricity grid, but still, it far outstrips solar generation here on Earth. And so, it's because of the production of power around the clock that this space-based solar energy becomes really attractive to provide what they call as a base load to back up ground-based renewables. Currently, we've got nuclear energy and gas turbines providing the base load for the grid. But those produce, of course, radioactive waste or carbon dioxide. And so this is why the prospect of space-based solar power is kind of attractive. So it's capable, it's effective. The cost of electricity is about a quarter of that of nuclear, even with the 60 rocket trips up to space to set this whole thing up. Until recently, I guess, any thought of building a 2,000-ton solar power solar station in space was everyone thought of it was sci-fi weirdness. Really? You're going to do that? But now they're in talks with SpaceX about using Starship to get all of these parts up there that would then be assembled by robots into this power station in orbit. What could go wrong? Well, what about space junk hitting it? What about some catastrophe that sends it crashing down to Earth? I mean, it's got to be pretty big, right? So, I mean, I don't know. Does it burn up on reentry or kind of like the packet of batteries that came crashing through that man's house in Florida? Do we need to worry about this thing coming back down? Maybe we should take a beat to think about this a little bit. But the rocket is expected to dramatically reduce the cost of taking anything into orbit to as little of 1% of what it was just 20 years ago. So that's a game changer. It's become more affordable to do these types of things. They said we'll be able to do things in space that just weren't feasible even a decade ago, thanks to companies like SpaceX. One of the challenges, they say, is people's perception of all of this. Reassuring the public that the microwave beam bringing the power back to Earth is actually harmless, right? They say the receiving antennas would be well away from any area of the population, probably offshore. They need to demonstrate and take the public with them, but they said they have a clear route to do that. So, more evidence is needed to back these claims that it has a low carbon footprint, even though they're taking rockets up to space to do it. But they're still working on it, and this could become a thing. I have to go to the chat to see what you guys think of this one. It's so interesting to me. Thermal-based sand batteries is a better option. All right. Mo says, power loss can be determined by the inverse proportion to the square. No, you're talking your math. Now you're confusing me. No can do. Need a working prototype. True. I don't know. If there's a moon base, says Calvin, will you get better information on the eclipse? Oh, when there's a moon base, you mean with the NASA studies? Perhaps. Grady says, I'm lighting my greenhouse and any daytime needs. That's cool. Oh, because you're building your off-grid system. It'll take 2 years to pay it off with the 10-year warranty batteries and Canadian panels, 20-year life. Better than paying PG&E. I'm sitting here in my blanket because it's chilly. And I refuse to turn on the heat. Everyone's bundled up in this place. What if a plane flies through the beam? These are things I think they need to consider, Rev. Absolutely. Good to see you in here. But we use grid electricity at night. Oh, on your, at your house? Yeah. Interesting. It's all very high tech and sci-fi, but it's very interesting. Can I trouble you to please click the like button while you're here? And if you haven't subscribed, we're pushing toward 2,000 and we need you to subscribe. So thank you for doing it. Appreciate that very much. Something else they're doing, especially in anticipation of this eclipse, is they're building this massive camera. It is humongous. And I think it's here in the Bay Area. Yeah, it's the world's largest digital camera. And they're doing it to research elusive dark matter and dark energy. We talked about that a little bit yesterday. But this is a 3,200 megapixel legacy survey of space and time camera. And it's supposed to reveal what only exists in scientific theory, dark matter and dark energy. The U.S. Department of Energy's Office of Science is supporting the development of this gigantic digital camera in hopes that they're going to gain new insights into how natural forces make the universe what it is. So far, there hasn't been a device that's captured proof of dark matter. But scientists say it leaves its mark on the universe by gravitationally affecting how galaxies rotate, and it could be 5 times more abundant than visible matter. It only exists in theory, dark energy. Likewise, it suggests that it is what causes the universe to continually accelerate its expansion. We did a story on the dark matter yesterday when they talked about this study that 3D mapped the universe, right? About 95% of the universe's mass energy is thought to be dark energy and dark matter. It's a theoretical explanation about why stars and planets and galaxies behave the way they do. Dark matter doesn't produce light or energy, and that makes it invisible to existing technology. So at this point, scientists are only making these educated guesses about what could be the building blocks of dark matter and dark energy. They're putting this massive digital camera at the Vera C. Rubin Observatory in a remote area of Chile. It's going to be right near the top of Cerro Pachón, which is more than 8,900 feet above sea level, with an unobstructed view of the Earth's southern skies. It weighs 3 tons. It's the largest ever made for astronomy, uses the highest resolution camera ever made at 3,200 megapixels. It's got 3 really large lenses, the largest measuring more than 5 feet in diameter. And each lens opens for 15 seconds to take photos of space and switch lenses in 5 seconds before taking the next photo. It's got special filters to analyze different types of light, including near-infrared, ultraviolet, visible light, to obtain different types of data via photograph. And it's expected that this high-res, massive camera will take these detailed pictures that could detect a golf ball from 15 miles away, taking photographs that capture a section of the nighttime sky 7 times wider than the full moon. They've been working on this massive camera for 20 years. They want to take pictures of billions of galaxies and amass the largest photographic catalog of data in existence. So it's exciting. I will see. I can't wait to show you the pictures from this thing. Once they get it into place, I hope it works. Love that. There's the story about a fantasy flat. I don't know if I want to live in a place where I have to look at that every day. Not that it's not cool looking. Again, we go back to art being in the eye of the beholder, right? This flat is getting special status. This man who owned the flat died in 2019. His name was Ron Gittins. And he only allowed a few people into his home. He lived there for more than 30 years. He converted it into a fantasy world. And now, after volunteers campaigned to save what he did in here, it's been given something called Grade 2 listed status. It's a ground floor apartment of a semi-detached house in Oxton, Merseyside in the UK. And Ron Gittins was an artist. And so he used his creativity to decorate his home. Here's a little bit more of what you can see inside. There's the potty. It's an ocean potty. Pretty nice. Ooh. I mean, it's very dramatic. It's interesting. And it would be sad to see the art go away, I suppose. But here you can see he created these fireplaces in the shape of a lion and a minotaur, fashioned after a Roman altar in the kitchen, painted the walls with floor-to-ceiling Egyptian, Greek, and marine-themed murals. And again, he only ever allowed a few people to come in and see what he was doing in here. But when his niece visited after his death in 2019, she decided, we've got to save this. They call it Ron's Place. She said he created his own fantasy world in a rented flat. You hear of people whose landlords won't return the deposits because they've left a tack mark on the wall. And here he created a whole minotaur fireplace. And now the work has become the first example of outsider art, which is a term apparently used for people that make art, but they don't have any conventional training to do so. And his flat is now granted Grade 2 listing by the Department for Culture, Media, and Sport on the advice of something called Historic England. I don't know what you do if you're the landlord in this case, you know? But the volunteers went after it. They applied to have the property listed to ward off evil and put off property developers. They even got a big donation, and that allowed them to form the Wirral Arts and Culture Community Land Trust. And then they were actually able to buy the home at auction, and now they hope to use it to inspire other artists. So, Ron's niece said her late uncle was an artist and that they always had the idea of a holistic house of art. She said, I'm sure it's what he would have wanted, to have the listing give us a lot more credibility. She said he'd be over the moon with this decision. He was really proud of it. It's sad because when I was going through his stuff, she said, I found a postcard he'd written to me saying, I can't wait to show you what I've done. But he wrote it and sent it to the wrong address, so she never saw it. But she said it kind of validates what she's trying to do. And she said he'd be made up at the lengths that they've gone to get this done. It's interesting. What do you think of it? Worth saving? I mean, a lot of people thought so. Somebody would love to live there, he said. Yes, he did it in a rental. Absolutely. Ward off evil. Yeah, they didn't want people to develop it and ruin it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make it a coat rack. Mar says we can create completely alternate realities in our dreams. Doesn't come without a cost. Yeah. Maybe folk art. Maybe that's true. I'd love to have this as an office. Come into my office. Please have a seat. Yeah, here's the other one. And this is just a fraction of the pictures. I mean, what he's done here in every room, every surface. When I moved into my house, the lady that lived here thought she was an artist. And she painted every single door in the house. And all the doors were like this. They were awful. Like psychedelic flowers and, I don't know, stuff from the 60s looking kind of things. I mean, it was really, really horrible. And it took a while for us. And it was back and front. Like, it would be one design on the front, and then you go into the bathroom and close the door, and it was like, oh, God, it was really bad. It took us a while to save up enough money to replace all the doors in this house. That was one of the first things we did. Horrible. But, hey, it's art. What are you going to do? Let's talk about this one. I love this show so, so much. This TV show, maybe you've heard of it. It's called Finding Your Roots. I love this show. It's usually a celebrity, an author, an actor or actress, someone that, you know, you likely know in some capacity. And they take them on this journey of genealogy journey. And sometimes it involves, well, it always involves research as far as, you know, paperwork and documenting your family tree. But sometimes it involves DNA as well. So usually they take a DNA sample and then they compare everything with what the research showed, kind of make sure they got it all right. So Michael Douglas goes on the show, finds out he's related to Scarlett Johansson. He's the DNA cousin of Scarlett Johansson. They said, using professional genealogists, Douglas and Johansson were found to share identical stretches of DNA on four different chromosomes, which appear on her maternal lines, stretching back to Jewish communities in Eastern Europe. He said he can't wait to see her and tell her. I'm sure she already knows, right? It's really interesting, the things they find out. This is a PBS show called Finding Your Roots. And I'm telling you, once you start watching it, it's like you can't look away. Since 2012, Finding Your Roots has uncovered some pretty interesting connections. In one episode, Julia Roberts and Edward Norton learned they were genetic cousins. Kerry Washington figured out that she was conceived through a sperm donor. I mean, a lot of times they'll take someone on a genealogy journey and you find out things that maybe you didn't want to know about the history of your family, right? Maybe someone was a slave or someone was involved in the slave trade, or, and those can be the emotional moments of this show. But it's so interesting and fascinating to see where you come from, where these people come from. What a dream for me, anyway, to be on that show and hear the stories of the past. This show, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern on PBS. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend. Here's a story. I kind of skipped around a little bit, but I wanted to show you this one, too. This is one of those oops stories where, I mean, I think men react differently to this story than do women, but it's a story about a diver, a French diver who slipped. Oopsies. And here's what happened. Ooh. Yeah, that's not
chuté,
good.
J'ai chuté devant le président, j'ai chuté devant la France entière.
Yeah.
Bon allez, il est l'heure, je prends la parole parce que avec ce qui s'est passé, je crois que vous avez envie d'un petit débrief. Donc je vais vous expliquer ce qui s'est passé ce matin. Déjà, je tiens à rassurer tout le monde, tout va bien, je me suis pas fait mal, il y avait un peu de sang, c'est pas grave.
I didn't hurt myself.
Ça m'empêchera
okay.
pas d'aller m'entraîner cet après-midi.
Didn't stop him from going to practice, but again, here's what it looked like when he fell. Ow. Right?
Fait chuter, j'ai chuté devant le président.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate, but a lot of people were pretty concerned about him when that happened. These things are dangerous. They practice and they practice, and sometimes that's what happens, right? Sometimes they don't get it right. Guy Fieri is from Northern California, and they are celebrating him in his hometown now. He's a guy that does some pretty nice things. And whether you like him or whether you don't, you have to admit that Guy Fieri, that's how he says it, Fieri, is always the one at a wildfire who's providing meals to the first responders. He's always the one in Northern California, at least, when there's some kind of crisis, Guy Fieri is there. During the pandemic, when there were waiters, waitresses, chefs, food service people that were really struggling, he was setting up a fund to help them. So whether you like his persona or, you know, whether I've heard people say, you know, he doesn't do interviews or maybe he's a little hard or whatever, his heart is in the best place consistently. And it's why I like him. Because I've seen, it's one of those things where actions speak louder than words with this person, right? And he always seems to be doing something that I find to be so incredibly valuable. And his hometown noticed too, because he has been named honorary mayor of his childhood hometown in Northern California. And that is the town of Ferndale, far, far north, way past Sonoma County. They have named, from now until, I don't know, perpetuity, every April 5th will be Guy Fieri Day in Ferndale. He said, "Now, therefore, I, Randall Cady, mayor, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Ferndale, proclaim April 5th of 2024 and every April 5th thereafter, Guy Fieri Day, and on this day, the title of honorary mayor." That's the proclamation. We thank Guy for his positive impact on the city. So he is told about it. He said, "I feel proud and I feel like Ferndale is with me wherever I go." So Fieri now lives in Santa Rosa here in Sonoma County, but he grew up in Ferndale, which is it's much further north. It's about 2.5 hour drive to the Oregon border. And he started his first food business there when he was 10 years old. It was a soft pretzel cart called the Awesome Pretzel Cart. Of course, he went on to open many more restaurants. And 40 seasons, he's been on the Food Network. One of his latest shows is called Chicken Guy. He does that. So I just thought that was kind of a cool thing. Guy Fieri Day. I think he deserves it. Did you know they do this at Disneyland? It's Disney Pride. And I know, I'm sorry, I'm keeping you a little bit over time here, but Mark's show ended late, so I'm going to try to push a little past. And this is, I promise this is the last story for today. Well, maybe the second to last. But this story is about Disneyland and Disneyland's Pride Night After Dark event. And the tickets are going on sale for this. This is a big deal. It's held at Disneyland in California, June 18th and 20th. So tickets go on sale for this event for Magic Key holders April 9th and then April 11th for the general public. And they usually sell out. This is a really popular event. They start the tickets at $159. Last year, Disneyland held its first ever Pride Night After Dark, and it celebrates the LGBTQIA+ community and allies. And they have special entertainment for this thing, fireworks. They have a welcome wagon, you could say, featuring Disney characters. They have dance parties. They have special photo ops. They have merchandise, event merchandise, specialty food. They do, this is kind of cute, they do a funnel cake with whipped cream on top with little rainbow sprinkles. So they get into it, and it's pretty cute. They have a 3-hour pre-party each night of the event, and it's a big to-do, and people love it. So just to let you know, on Tuesday, which is the 9th, April 9th, that's when the key holder tickets go on sale, and then April 11th for the general public. So if that's something you're planning to attend, I wanted to let you know so you don't miss it. And lastly, I'll do the story last. How about this? I don't know. One stories, two stories. I have so much to tell you. There's a library in Marin County where instead of checking out a book, which you could do as well, they check out art. So maybe your walls are blank. Maybe you don't have the money to fill them up with new and interesting visual things. So you go to the library in Marin County and they will check out and loan you some art. Library cardholders can use the new program, it's called On the Wall, to borrow art by a Marin artist. And there's several that have signed up to lend out art. You can do it in South Novato, Point Reyes Station, Inverness, Corte Madera, in Marin City as well. All these branches will have 6 pieces of art to loan out, just like a book. Now, I think it's a little more difficult to damage a book than it is art. So you have to be really careful with it because you want to give it back in good shape and respect the artists. But there's at least 20, 30 artists that are taking part in this program. They said it was created so all county residents could have access to original art to enjoy in their homes. Because how many people don't, you know? Maybe they have a couple family pictures up. Maybe they have a poster of something they found at a fair up on the wall. I mean, there's not a lot of people that can go out and really afford to buy the pictures they see in galleries or, you know, I don't know, wherever you see at a restaurant, you see art displayed sometimes and you look at the price and you're like, oh, $4,000, right? So how many of us have that kind of art that we can display in our home? So what an interesting concept to do an art lending, just like book lending. And really, you know, it's all art, whether it's writing, whether it's visual. So interesting. Do I have time for one more? Can you guys stay for one more story? How about this one? Because it goes along with art. We'll talk about AI art generators. And I thought this was kind of an interesting story because it goes through the ones that, actually, they say create cool art. I think this AI-generated art all looks kind of fakey. That's what it looks like to me. And I know someone created it on the other side of the computer, right? They may have used AI tools to get there, but they still used AI tools. I mean, so it's not that, and humans created AI, right? So it's not that humans didn't have a hand in making this art, but it all has the same kind of fakey look to it, that it's not my jam, I have to say. But Popular Science went through and they picked out the top five AI art generators that they say actually create cool images. And here they are. DALL-E, D-A-L-L-E, and ChatGPT, both developed by OpenAI. They say there's a little bit of overlap in what you can do with them. You can try DALL-E2 on the web, and that includes the option to add some AI magic to your pictures. It's about $15 to do that. So then there's one called Midjourney. You have to join the Midjourney Discord and you have to have an account for that. And the subscription plans are about $10 a month. But if you're into creating AI art, then maybe it's worth it to you. Adobe Firefly has its own AI image generator and it's called Firefly. So you find it built into Adobe's tools, including Photoshop, but it's also available as a standalone on the internet. You get 25 pictures a month for free, and it's a $4.99 a month subscription. There's one called Crayon, C-R-A-I-Y-O-N. Crayon has a free tier, so you can jump into that one for free. And you don't need an account, but if you need images faster and you don't want their watermarks, then you can pay, and that's about $6 a month. So there's the top five AI art generators. If you're into creating these things, for whatever reason, maybe, you know, you've got a website or marketing or just for fun. Those are the top ones. It looks like Crayon, C-R-A-I-Y-O-N, is the only one that gives you a free option, even though it does have a watermark. All right, I've taken up too much of your time this afternoon, but thank you for joining the party. Thank you if you could click the like button and click the subscribe button as well. Now we'll go back and read all of your comments. I thank you so much for being here. Try it, you might like it. Who knows, Calvin? I may indeed like it. Yeah. Midjourney, according to Mars, gives free 20 or so prompts. Good to know. Thank you, Mars. And thank you guys for being here. Have a great weekend. Stay dry out there and stay warm. And I will see you back here on Monday. I will also be filling in for Nicky Maduro on Monday. So hopefully I'll see you at 9 o'clock in the morning when we get that show started. And then we'll do the Mark Thompson show Monday and back here for the After Party Live. So I do hope to see you and spend time with you again on Monday. But until then, make it a great Friday afternoon and have a great weekend. And I'll see you soon. Bye, everyone.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.